Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes the political economics column. He's based in London. But he was 8 years in China, in Hong Kong, for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and observes China now from the distance of London. But still, China's problems are global. The FT has a headline this morning that's deeply ironic. China is suffering its own China shock, that's in quotes. Labor-intensive manufacturing vanishing, millions of jobs lost, with repercussions for stability and growth. Joe, your new column is about growth in China, not much. There are announcements constantly about the new stimulus plan that's coming from the leadership. I hear so many of them, I get lost. Where are they in stimulating a deeply troubled economy, especially real estate? Good day to you, Joe.
Hi, John. Well, I mean, what you're asking is really the trillion-dollar question in a lot of ways, because it's hard to tell where we are with the Chinese economy right now. I mean, one of the things that I found interesting the past few weeks is that you, on the one hand, you do have the steady drip of good news coming out about the Chinese economy. I mean, you have seen data this month suggesting that retail sales have been in reasonably good shape and industrial production is doing okay and all of the rest of it. And yet you have all of these other indicators that suggest that that's not the case. And, the biggest indicator of all is that the government keeps talking about the need to provide additional stimulus for this economy that otherwise we're supposed to believe is in great shape. And so the latest thing that they're talking about, although they haven't put any numbers on it yet, are measures that would be intended to stimulate household consumption. And this would be done by things like creating various new welfare benefits for daycare or various healthcare social benefits or the like. And the theory is that if the government is paying for those expenditures, that frees households to spend their money on other things, other consumer goods. This would follow on the stimulus measures that they did last year in the hundreds of billions of yuan, tens of billions of dollars that were basically intended to deal with bad debts on the balance sheets of local governments, again, to kind of set them up to do some of this spending on households. The problem is that you really start wondering how much of a Chinese economy there is without all of this stimulus. I mean, so much of the activity right now traces back pretty directly to the government spending money for things. So I think that they're running into a real problem now where the economy is becoming so unstable that it is entirely dependent on the government. And you start wondering how sustainable actually is such an economy over the medium term.
In your column, you made me smile when you pointed to cash for clunkers, calling the Chinese economy industrial scale. Remind us all what cash for clunkers was, Joe. A moment in time.
Oh, those were the days. So we're going back in the U.S. to 2009 and the early months of the Obama administration. And remember, that was when we were sinking into the Great Recession. And one of their strategies to bail out Detroit and the auto industry is that the government would give you a trade-in subsidy if you traded in an old car for a new car, especially if that newer car was more fuel efficient. And so this program became known as the Cash for Clunkers. I mean, it's not remembered very fondly in the U.S. I think people understand that there was an element of taking from Peter to give to Paul about all of this and that it wasn't really very stimulative of the economy. I mean, it basically just accelerated people trading in cars that were getting old that they would have traded in eventually anyway. So we haven't really done anything like that again in the U.S. But now China doesn't seem to be doing anything other than that. I mean, their version of cash for clunkers are various of these trade-in schemes. They do one for companies, where there are all sorts of subsidies and regulatory requirements that are supposed to get manufacturers to upgrade industrial plant. And then for households, there are various trade-in schemes that cover everything from cars to materials for home renovation projects. You can get subsidies for that, to home appliances like washing machines or dishwashers. My favorite is that they've now also started including personal electronics like mobile phones and tablets in this program. And the key point is, I mean, in the U.S., cash for clunkers during the brief period when we had it was almost an asterisk on the economy. It wasn't that big. In China, it feels like it's becoming all of the economy because so much of the areas where you see growth right now, whether it's parts of household spending or industrial investment, it all traces back to the particular categories of equipment or consumer goods that the government is subsidizing.
My memory of the cash for clunkers here triggered my memory of the cash for clunkers in China. I didn't know to call it that at the time. I was told, or I heard, that they were actually going around inspecting people's electronics, like their coffee pots, and recommending that they trade them in if they were good citizens. Now, that was an anecdote. Do we know if it actually happened, Joe?
I haven't heard that sort of story specifically, but I think that it's definitely true that the government in China seems to understand that these programs are very important to juicing the economic numbers. Because remember, China is also in the situation, I think really uniquely in the world, where they set an explicit economic growth target every year right now. The official target is about 5%, which, I mean, we all know really means 5% is what they're arguing for. So they have the target and they have the tools to achieve that target on paper, such as these trade-in programs. So it wouldn't surprise me if you are seeing officials in various places getting creative about the ways that they use this policy tool in order to achieve the predetermined growth target.
Now, what's driving this? Is it the real estate collapse? Is that what triggered it, or was it apparently going to happen in manufacturing and real estate and the consumer class, who have never risen to the occasion even once in these last 30 years? Is there one of those three things that's creating the difficulty, or all at once? How does it go, Joe?
Well, I mean, John, as you and I have talked about many years now, they've ended up always in this problem where the Chinese economy had become deeply unbalanced because they were very, very focused on manufacturing for exports and on the property market as their engines of growth. And neither of those things were particularly sustainable. And bear in mind, this was awful for Chinese households, too, because, I mean, for all of this talk of a rising Chinese middle class, and it's true that they have lifted hundreds of millions of Chinese people out of poverty, and that is a good thing. People were still stuck in the situation where they weren't fully enjoying the benefits of that prosperity because the government was discouraging domestic consumption because they wanted to filter resources into property and export manufacturing. And what we're seeing are the collapse of both of those pillars. I mean, partly this is because President Xi Jinping realized that the real estate bubble was not sustainable, and he actually did something about it. He started pricking that bubble, and the problem is that kind of once you have started deflating that balloon, you can't really put the air back into it again very easily. So that's one problem they've got. And the other problem they've got is that the costs of manufacturing in China naturally are increasing, so they're a less competitive location for manufacturing than they used to be. And the rest of the world is less tolerant of a flood of Chinese exports than they used to be. And so I think that China is, these two traditional pillars are starting to crumble, and they haven't really ever been able to develop that domestic consumption pillar that they should have. I think that these subsidies like the trade-in program are a recognition that they need more domestic consumption. But in order for it to, quote unquote, count for the economy, that consumption would really need to be an outgrowth of domestic productivity gains and entrepreneurship and sustained economic growth in that way. And instead, they're just trying to create the appearance of that domestic consumption growth with all of these subsidies.
You mentioned deflate the balloon, which reminds me of the New York Times report in these last days, I believe it was the weekend or yesterday, used the word deflation for the Chinese economy. Now, if it's the deflation I'm familiar with, that's a curse upon the economy for generations. I believe Japan was started deflation in the late 20th century and is still worried about it, even though they're rising salaries. There was a Bank of Japan warning yesterday where we're not ready yet to raise rates because there's the threat of deflation. Is that in China now, or is it a worry in China, deflation?
Well, yes, I think you are starting to hear that concern from a bunch of economists, and I would put a couple caveats on that. First off, I mean, if you're talking about deflation of consumer prices, I tend not to worry about that in the way that a lot of economists do. In most economies, it is kind of a bad sign in a large developing economy like China, though, because in a developing economy, you actually should expect, fairly moderate or faster inflation than we would tolerate in the U.S., and that's because rising consumer prices are actually going to reflect the overall gains in productivity in the economy that you would want to see for a developing country. So what you would expect in a country like China is consumer prices that are increasing much faster than we would tolerate in the U.S., but no one would care because that was reflective of rising productivity in general that also brought higher wages with it and all sorts of benefits. If we're seeing deflation in consumer prices in China, that's a symptom that something is going badly wrong in the economy. And the other thing that is deflating that is unambiguously a crisis for them is the deflation in the property market. I mean, asset price deflations generally are really, really bad news, particularly if you couple that with all of the leverage, all of the debt that China has accumulated over the years related to that asset, all of the mortgage debt, all of the local government debt that is related in various ways to real estate or the property market. Deflating property prices are a definite crisis in that regard. And I think that that's something that Beijing and frankly, the rest of the world really needs to be concerned about.
And the China shock that the FT writes about. They have examples of a factory that used to have 100 workers, now 20, or Chinese companies going to Vietnam for cheaper manufacturing on the factory floor. That's the China shock happening to China. Unemployment, does China talk about unemployment? Do they have a plan? Because there must be large numbers of people without adequate jobs now.
Well, I think they stopped publishing some data series on unemployment at one point because they were concerned that the numbers were becoming too dire, if memory serves. I think that, this is a really interesting story because on its own, this issue of the China shock coming to China shouldn't be bad news for them. It would be reflective of the fact that, their manufacturing is becoming higher value add. They're shifting more into high tech, high productivity manufacturing. That is a good thing. The thing that's misfiring for them is that they haven't figured out how they're going to create other economic opportunities for the people who are displaced by that or for the people who now will not be able to find jobs in those factories when they graduate from high school because the jobs aren't there as the manufacturing has gone high tech. And so that's kind of and I think that's representative of the broader dilemma that China has. Some of that dilemma is self-inflicted, the consequence of bad policy decisions that they made over many decades that now have left them in a parlous position. Some of it is a result of the fact that normal and otherwise healthy economic change is catching an economy that has been made very brittle by all of these policy mistakes. And so I think it's a real problem for them.
Joseph Sternberg, Wall Street Journal editorial page. He writes political economics. He's in London. When we come back, life in London. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.